final plenary session. There will be three distinguished speakers who will lead us to the victory ceremony and closing of the physical event. Already now, I wish to say that I hope that all of us feel at the end we do not want this to stop at all. We can do something about that. We can keep the momentum. We will get back to that bit. Three distinguished speakers. I will not take too much time or any more time from any of them. They are known to you from the profiles in the Book of Abstracts, from the web pages. Some of them are also known to you from the pages of the famed magazines of the world. So no words from me are needed to prepare floor for these gentlemen. The first one, Paul Dine. I've had the pleasure of knowing Dimitri for 10 years. I only introduce him by saying he is the godfather of us all. Paul, the floor is yours.
I hope the clapping was for him, because I feel a bit of an intruder, almost an impersonator, and I'll try and explain to you that. But first of all, let me say that in my personnel, in the description, I'm referred to as a guru. And I must say that's the first time that I know of that that's been used in reference to me. But it reminded me of my dear dad, bless him, who when I was a young man said to me, "Paul, you always know when you're growing older because the policemen look young and everybody calls you sir." So I expect I'm called a guru because of my gray hair. But at any rate, why do I feel a bit of an impersonator? I wanted just, could I have just the last back? Just a little. Yep. A couple of months ago, I hear from my friend Marco, and he asked me whether I would be willing to do a keynote speech. And of course, I'd known him well for a long time, but we're in infrequent contact, I think is a tactful way of putting it. And so I accepted, and then I got the name of what the conference was going to be about. And you have to know that since 2007, which was the last time I was here and spoke at a conference, I haven't been really in touch with what was going on. So my first reaction when I saw the title, Global Business Creation Games, I have to admit I was rather suspicious and skeptical. So, but then, please, yes. Thank you. And this is the thing I use here, isn't it? Yes. Okay, just that, like that. Yes, thank you. I read what was sent to me, and I was very happy with the global bit because my name is Paul Dine, and I've lived in 6 countries in the meantime. And I've worked, and when I say worked, I really do mean work. I don't mean just business trips. I've worked in about 40 countries. So global, intercultural, those things I'm very interested in indeed. When I say I worked in about 40 countries, that was through a previous existence of mine in industry with a big multinational. And I used to set up programs for companies around the world, and I'd be there many times, normally for at least 6 weeks, sometimes 3 months, sometimes longer, setting up the programs and then running them. So because of that, I got extremely interested in cross-cultural issues. And so I was happy to see global. But then when I read the introductory literature, I saw that one of the things we were asked to do was to have the courage, the guts, to step outside our comfort zone. So I thought to myself, well, okay, let's step outside the box, because I honestly couldn't think at the beginning, when I saw the title, what on earth I could say which would be of use to you. But stepping outside the box, I just let things run, and I thought of my current work, and also I had a look at coincidences. I don't know whether you have that, but it's very funny when something is coming up, and then by coincidence, you read this, or you see that, and so on. So what I thought I would do is try to show you a bit of what I'm doing, of some of those coincidences, and then get down to the things which I think are really important. And what I'd like to give the game away right at the beginning, I'd like to talk about bridging cultures. And I'll explain in a moment exactly what I mean by that. And I'm talking of the art, not the science. And that, when I read about that, the art and not the science of management, that rang a big bell. And also got me thinking, and I must say, I just taught a course at UASCULA, and it has helped me get a new insight into it, and I hope I can convey that to you as well. So, at present, I work for NJIT, New Jersey Institute of Technology. I teach, but I'm now in our Honors College. And the Honors College, that is for particularly gifted students who also, besides bringing good grades, so the academic side, also bring with them interesting personal perspectives, additional things that they've done, community service, and so on. And I'm mainly an advisor there. And it's a very, it's a very satisfying job. I'm dealing with very bright students. The first thing, perhaps, which is I should mention, is that NJIT, we have a very diverse student body, unusually diverse. We're number 9, sometimes it's number 7, sometimes number 8, when you look among the universities and higher institutes of higher education and so on, of which in the United States there are about 4,000. So we're number 9 for the diversity. And we're a medium-sized university, 9,500 in all. About 6,500 are undergrads, and the remaining 3,000 are graduate students or doctorates. They're writing their doctorate. So, and we have, when I say diverse, 2 years ago I was talking at a similar group like this, and I wanted to talk about the diversity. And I asked a colleague who has everything in his computer, could you let me know how many countries we have here and how many languages? And 2 years ago, it was 53 countries and 54 languages. I asked the same thing just before I left last week, and we now have 80 countries and 80 languages. We've got about 500 Chinese students, about 500 Indian students. We've got students from Africa, from you name it. So it's very diverse, but an interesting thing that although the number of countries has grown up, and I thought it has increased, it's very interesting to see that the number of Indian students we have has gone down in those 2 years, which is very interesting. If you read about the way as companies begin to get very important, particularly in the Silicon Valley of India and so on, how many students now are studying inside India and joining Indian companies? There's still a whole bunch, as I said, 500, who come to study in the United States to get their graduate degree mainly, and then to work at least for some years in the United States. But the vast majority of them intend to go back now. So there's an interesting change as we see India as the one of the big emerging countries. Okay, so we have, I thought this might be interesting for you. It's a course we started last year for honors students. It's called an interdisciplinary design studio, and it's very related to the idea of helping companies get created, so the global business creation. And but this is starting at the other end. So this was one of the bells that started ringing when I began to think about what I could tell you. And the mission of the IDS is, and I've picked out those words in a different color, which relate very much to what I've been hearing about here today. So, and what I read about beforehand, of course. It's to develop skilled entrepreneurial future leaders who will create and apply technology to yield better solutions with highly positive societal effect. So I think there's a lot creating entrepreneurs, future leaders, creating better solutions, and that they should have a societal impact. I heard a lot about that today in the previous session with where the various eco groups presented their findings. So it is also, it's a 4-year interdisciplinary program. And it's for honors undergraduate students, so undergrads. So we're starting at the other end. And what we're hoping is that they will learn to develop virtual companies with complete business and financial plans. And the hope is, we're in the second year now, that they are in the process of developing their own companies. And just to make sure that it is an art that we're talking about, that it's in touch with the real goings-on in business, it is mentored by industry experts, entrepreneurs, and venture capitalists who are on the board of the IDS program. So we have a board, and twice a term, the students have to make, according to the degree we've got to, the level we've got to, they have to present their companies and what they're up to. So, these are presidents of companies in New Jersey, entrepreneurs, venture capitalists, as I say. And they also, it's been very interesting. I'm not running this program, it's a colleague, and it's been very successful. And the presidents, the entrepreneurs and so on, have been surprised by the standard of the presentations that they've been seeing. And they've swapped their email addresses with the students. So there's one in charge of a group, it's normally a group of three or four students who are founding their company, 24 in all in the group. And when we go back, when we start the new year, the third year will begin for them, and we get a new group coming in. So that is a very early start. Also, so we're trying to get the idea of growing your own company within getting it started very early in the undergraduate program for particularly gifted students. In January, these are all things that sort of came up. 2 weeks ago, I returned from Argentina and Brazil, where I had been on a foreign study tour. I jumped in at the last moment because a professor was absent who should have been running it. And as I'd done this before, I took them to 23 countries around Europe, the Far East, and South America. I was in Brazil and Argentina with them, and now at the beginning of January, we're trying to get the idea going of foreign study tours for the honors students. But it's a matter of money. And we're going to start, and money is very scarce. I'm sure you've read that. We're a state university. So compared to the prices that you have to pay for your education at a private university, it's a bargain. But it still costs $28,000 a year. So it's a lot of money for families, and inside the Honors College, because of what they bring, they get financial backing and also good scholarships. So it's very interesting for the parents as well to know that they won't have to pile up debt in order to get their kids a good education. And we'll be going to the Dominican Republic, and it's connected with the health idea that we were talking about. And we will be in the Dominican Republic in the west, about 30 kilometers from the Dominican border, where we also have groups working in Haiti, from our particular group, which is Engineers Without Borders, and they're providing and have developed systems to provide drinkable water, fresh water, for the groups there. Here, what we will be trying to do is, it's a small number of ADHC is the abbreviation, Albert Dorman Honors College. Albert Dorman he's the head of a very big construction company, and he provided the money to found the Honors College, which is now going into its 16th year. And attached to the university, we also have, you were talking in some of the groups about incubators, we also have an EDC, an Entrepreneurship Development Center. And this is, it's by chance, but it's the biggest incubator, entrepreneurship development center of all the universities in the United States. We've got 98 companies who are starting up there. And one of the companies has developed among other things, got a whole lot of, patents to its name, but it's developed a system with cheap iPhones, how you can have virtual medical attention. And we will be going there to see in a remote village what the possibilities are. Okay, so, and we're working with a charity, Cambiando Vidas, so changing lives. And we will be in a rather remote part of the Dominican Republic. So, this was one of the coincidences of something I read, and I heard a very wonderful phrase recently. I read it, and I thought it was so good. He didn't talk in his article about the Great Recession, but he talked about the Great Stagnation. And I think that's a very apt term for what is going on in the United States at the moment. And when this is over, of course, we're going to have a very different world that we'll be working in. And I just summarize in that case, everyone, everywhere, will be competing for everything everywhere. So it's going to be a very different, what we say in the United States, a level playing field. And it's going to bring a whole lot of new challenges for companies. So I just thought I'd put this in. I did start a little later, but I'm trying to make sure I don't go over time. Of course, in the United States, and you know the traditional, Democrats, the figure that represents them is a donkey, and the Republicans is an elephant. And one of our big hopes at the moment with this very lamentable presidential race going on at the moment, that there will be a surprise third runner who's independent of both and that we can change everything. But I just heard this. At the moment, the politics and politicians in the United States has reached the lowest, according to the latest polls, the lowest percentage ever, way under 10% of approval. So people are really fed up. And a friend told me this recently, which I think sums up the general American attitude. A driver is stuck in a traffic jam in Washington, D.C., and as he's waiting there, a man knocks on his car window and says, "Terrorists have kidnapped Congress, and they're asking for $100 million. Otherwise, they'll burn them with gasoline. And we're going from car to car to get donations." And the man stuck in the car, "And what are people giving on average?" he asked. And he said, "Oh, about a gallon each." So I think that describes very aptly what is going on in the United States. So I also, with Steve Jobs died, just 15 days ago in the New York Times, there was a very interesting article, a very interesting article by Walter Isaacson, who's the author of the biography, the official biography that you see everywhere, Steve Jobs. And I thought it was a very fascinating article because what he asked himself, his first sentence was, he always wondered how intelligent Steve Jobs was. And he says, well, he was very smart. He was really, really smart. And he asked himself, or could we even say he was really, 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 really smart? And he goes into the whole thing, and it's very interesting because it's related to the ideas that we had here. He points out that Steve Jobs, as you know, who dropped out of college and went to India, you know, like the Beatles, and wandered around India and got quite a bit of wisdom there, and the final point is one. But he examines him, and this is the guy who was with Steve Jobs frequently up until almost his death, just a couple of weeks before he was dying, while he was in bed and approaching the end, he was still talking to him. And he comes to the conclusion that he is a man of great imagination, and that he said that he would take over from the Indians the approach not of intellect, but of gut feeling, of intuition. And that's what he practiced, and ingenuity. And there's a very interesting discussion in the article, because he says, was he a genius? And he points out that Einstein, of course, and then he talks about Einstein, and that what was remarkable about him, he wasn't the first. There were other people. There was Poincaré, there was Hilbert, who were developing ideas along the same lines as Einstein. But Einstein was the one who made the leap to his general theory of relativity. And so he points out that he was extremely ingenious. He said, genius is perhaps too much, because he's certainly not an Einstein, but he was remarkable. And what I like as well is that in the United States, in Britain, we talk about a penny dropping. In the United States, a bulb goes, bree, and you've got a new idea. And he's combined into the bulb the logo of Mac. So, gut feeling. And if I didn't misread everything, that's what we are also talking about. And ingenuity, as I said, a lesser form of genius. There was another little incident that I think was very important. I also have to organize colloquia. So, and in this case, we got a student who I knew very well, who signed up for the Peace Corps after graduation, spent 2 years in Mali. And he was good enough to come and give a colloquium to everybody, which went down. It was a very moving colloquium. But I shall never forget that the question, and he looked absolutely baffled when it was question time, one of the people there said, what is the average annual income of the people in the village where he was working in Mali? And he was baffled, and he said, but they don't have an income. And this societal, this social effect that we've been talking about, that was really driven home. If they have to go to the doctor, or they have to go to a hospital, and they have to pay to get there by bus or by train, then what do? They sell a couple of chickens. Or if it's a big thing, they'll sell one of their cows, and that's their income. So I found that a very moving experience, and it made me see again all the nice things. Well, if I can, another talk was about health, and that people aren't looking after themselves, and I thought also for us. This is very interesting. This is from the year 95, so in 25 years, just watch the color changes. We start off with the number of Americans who are 10 to 14% overweight, but as it's a universal problem, also in developing countries, just watch how quickly this has developed. And now we're moving into the sphere of 15 to 19%. And then it goes on, it moves up from 15 to 19% to 20% and over. And all of this is from 85 to 2010. So they reckon that if things go on in the way they are at the moment, by the year 2030, 80% of Americans will be overweight. So, the health issue. But what really concerns me, and you saw on the last one, is the education. And it was when I read the chairman's foreword that we can choose that something really hit me. Committed teams for a game change and co-creation across borders. All I would like to point out from my point of view is how incredibly teams, mutually respectful, teams with full trust that are really working together and then working across borders is an immense challenge. So we're reading more and more about virtual business. There are a whole lot of Indian who have moved to the United States and who are now, because of the trust relationship between the companies over there, phoning, are sending email messages, and because of the trust relationship, the company will start producing those goods immediately, which are missing in the United States, and making money. And the importance of a team that really does trust one another. And virtual business, I will stop at this next one, but I wanted to show you how difficult it is to work across borders. I told you we have a very diverse student body, but okay, so we can say we have multicultural students. We can say they're also intercultural because they're living and studying alongside each other. And I've spoken to a lot of the honor students and they've all said we have a more natural relationship now to the people from the other Islam. We have a tremendous number now and it's very interesting to see the development in the Muslim ladies who are studying at our university, to see the dress development as well. The headscarf is universal, but whether it's the long dress, whether it's jeans, whether it's a blouse, whether it's something which doesn't show the figure at all, it's very, very interesting. We've got about, I would say, at least 200 on campus, so it's a very obvious part of our campus. I'd just like to finish off then and say that the global, how interesting it is that we all use English, but I was very grateful that we had this example. I received this morning when I arrived. What's your game? And I just thought to myself, what a brilliant example again of how we can use English, but with different meanings. And we all know what that means now in the context of the conference. But I wonder if I go to the United States and carry this around, what will the meaning they put into it? And for instance, we were talking about having a group where there could be trust before patents and so on, what if somebody in there, you've got the impression that they're actually working outside and passing secrets out and so on. I suppose one of the natural things that we might say immediately, we'd go up to him and look very angry and say, "What's your game? What game are you playing?" So, okay. So, in this wonderful novel, To Kill a Mockingbird, have you ever heard of it? Has any of you read it? It's an incredible book. I just reread it. And it's about a case in the South about the 1920s, 1930s. And it's a story told through the eyes of a child. And her dad is a lawyer. And it's the dad that's speaking here. And he has just defended a black, so still called in those days a Negro, who was accused of raping a white woman. And in the course of the trial, it becomes quite clear that there never was a rape, and that the father came home, who had a very bad reputation in this southern village anyway, and had bashed his daughter up. Now, although this comes out in the trial, he's still found guilty of raping and sent to prison, and he tries to escape very soon afterwards, and he's shot dead. Well, now, the son of the lawyer, Mr. Fitch, Atticus Fitch is a delightful name that he has, is absolutely horrified, flabbergasted, shocked by this. And Scout is his daughter, Jean Louise, that's her nickname. She's 10 years old. And he says, first of all, he said, if you can learn a simple trick, Scout, you'll get along a lot better with all kinds of people. You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view, until you climb into his skin and walk around in it. And that's the challenge of transcultural relations, being able to move backwards and forwards with acceptance and respect from culture backwards and forwards. That's why I called it bridging cultures. Okay, so Atticus Fitch talking to his daughter, if you haven't read it, I would just like to say the real challenge is the global part of the story. We have had lamentable lack of success. We've had essentially failure all along the road in real cooperation across borders, what I call transcultural, moving backwards and forwards between the cultures. Okay, sorry, but that's it. Thank you. Where does this go off? Blank. There we are. Thank you. Okay. Good. I'm sorry, but yeah. Okay. Okay. Good. You want this? Yeah. Oh dear.
I can take that.
I get a prison. Okay, I'll take that if you take that.
Paul, always a pleasure to hear your insights. To take us to a deep journey. And I'm so thankful that my tactics played out well. It ended up you coming here despite the fact that we are dealing with dangerous ideas, because you didn't know that we are dealing with dangerous ideas. We've been also talking about plans, how you should not make plans nowadays anymore so much, because it's very, very tough to stick to plans. Our plan this time holds very well because we have a contingency baked in. All the three astute speakers are all secure to have the 30 minutes, because we insist they speak for 30 minutes each, at least. So our program will be flexible. We will end the conference at 1700 hours.